Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and more now on the Beijing Olympics and the protests. You know, these are intended to be sort of China's coming out party, a showcase for their economic prosperity and modernized infrastructure and possibly their political liberalization. But the protests over human rights abuses have somewhat derailed that plan, at least the image-making part of the plan. So joining us to discuss what China stands to gain or lose with this year's Olympics is Richard Baum, professor of political science at UCLA, former director of the UCLA Center for Chinese Studies. Professor Baum, welcome to WNYC. Hello from New York.
Thank you, Brian.
I want to start with a comment on our website. Somebody posted, why is it that the host of the Olympics are allowed to turn the Olympics into a platform for their political ideology and use it as a shield from criticism? Yet it's called opportunistic for people to protest that government's brutal conduct when they're preparing for the Olympics, unquote. Is that a fair complaint? Didn't China politicize these Olympics from the beginning by making out their by making it their coming out party?
I don't know why that's politicization. I think it was more a question of national pride. I think they didn't look down the road far enough to see the possible problems this would create.
Well, if we assume that...
I think they were simply, you know, overwhelmed by their own success, and they're
if we
paying
assume
a price
that,
for that.
If we assume that governments sort of market themselves,
right.
Superpowers market themselves for, you know, the sake of increasing their sphere of influence and their influence in the world, then it goes beyond just pride in being Chinese, doesn't it?
Well, you have to understand that China has been down for so long, and the Chinese people have felt the weight of imperial and other kinds of oppression, including by their own government, by the way, that this has become a source of pride, not just for the government. I think what most of your callers and most people in this country don't realize mm-hmm. is that the vast majority of Chinese take great pride in this. It's not just the government that's trying to trump up this atmosphere of splendor. The people also support it for the most part, notwithstanding all the human rights problems that China has.
You know, I'm curious how, since you're a China expert, how you gauge the feeling of the mass of Chinese. I realize there are
right.
many, many different groups of Chinese.
Yes, of course.
But the feelings of Chinese toward the Tibet situation. I got
right.
an email this morning, knowing we were going to do this segment, from a Chinese American that was, it included some article from 1998, and it was unclear to me who wrote it, but somebody in the Chinese regime, apparently, talking about the history of feudalism and repression and poverty
right.
in Tibet
right.
prior to the Maoist revolution,
mm-hmm.
making it sound like things are better for Tibetans today,
right.
whether they like the Chinese or not, than they were before 1948-49,
right.
You know, arguing on that basis. Do you think that's a widespread feeling among Chinese and, for that matter, Chinese Americans?
I think probably most Chinese would accept that, most Chinese who have not lived or spent much time in Tibet. I mean, Tibet's a complicated question. Historically, it was not a shining example of democratic well-being. It was a highly stratified society with a kind of monarchic, feudal political structure.
At the top of
which
was...
With a lot of poverty at the bottom and a lot of wealth at the top. That's
and at the top of this
was.
Feudal system was the succession of Dalai Lamas?
Yeah, sure. Now, that's not to say that the Dalai Lama, the current Dalai Lama, isn't a warm, gentle, and well-meaning man, but the historical record of Tibet is not as quite as bright and gleaming and contrasting to Chinese brutality as many people think it is. Let's talk about this question, though, about agendas and who's using the Olympics for what purpose.
Uh-huh.
Granted, the Chinese government is using it to spread the image of their own modernity, enlightenment, and shining path. But they're not the only ones who are distorting the realities of China and the nature of the Olympic light that's being shined on China. There are a number of competing agendas in this battle that's going on today, all of them seeking the moral high ground. Everyone has their own moral narrative to describe what is happening and its ethical importance. And not all of them are wrong, and certainly many of them are not right. And some of them are partially right. Even the Chinese government is partly right. The free Tibetan human rights groups are also partly right. As a social scientist, what I have to do is sort of step back from all of this and try to look at the bigger picture of what's happening and what are the likely outcomes going to be and who's going to be harmed and who's going to benefit. And that gives you a little bit different take on things than the moral immediacy of trying to protest human rights problems in Tibet.
So who do you think is going to benefit by this entire spectacle, right, the Olympics being in Beijing, the very high-profile protests that are now taking place? Are they going to backfire on the protesters? Who ultimately is going to benefit or lose as far as you can predict?
Easier to tell the losers from the winner than the winners. Let's start with the losers. I think that U.S.-China relations are going to be a big loser. I think you can't poke your finger repeatedly in the eye of a major power and not expect to have ramifications and resentment. I think that Chinese nationalism is already at a fairly high level, and I think this is going to push it right up to the edge. You asked, how do we know what the Chinese people are feeling?
Uh-huh.
I've read the internet weblogs and the chat room traffic. I mean, the Chinese people are really angry, really, really angry, many of them. There are very few defenders of the West in this. This is unlike Tiananmen in that respect, because in Tiananmen, clearly the moral high ground was occupied by students. Today, that's not the case. Today, most Chinese identify with their government, not with the protests against their government. That's true even of overseas Chinese in San Francisco, by the way. Most of the Chinese in San Francisco are appalled at the violence that's accompanied the torch relay. I mean, quite apart from who the police are. I mean, I think that's a fake issue. I mean, it's not important. Of course, the Chinese are going to want to guard the torch, given what's been happening all over the world. They'd be crazy if they didn't. And it's not the army that's guarding the torch; it's the people's police. Who else are they going to send? Specially trained police.
That's what you do in a
situation like that. Now, San Francisco and other cities can say we don't want you, and I think that's perfectly legitimate. But it's not exactly.
Once it's there, it's got to be defended. Hua Seng in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling. Hua Seng, do we have
yes,
you?
Yes, yes, I'm here. Thank you for taking my call. All I want to say is that, you know, this Olympic relay and what happened in Tibet is not a second Tiananmen Square. So, you know, I want people to be open-minded, because, you know, you go find the truth for yourself. You know, what happened in Tiananmen Square is, you know, in our minds, totally a violent thing. And now Tibet, you know, the protest is not peaceful. You know, as you can see, that is the sort of things that happen all the world. You know, Tibet is not protesting peacefully. You know, what they did in London, Paris, you know, during the torture relay, that's not peaceful. That's why the Chinese government has some guard, you know.
What about the underlying issue? Why shouldn't they have more autonomy to be culturally and economically who they are?
Yeah, because, you know, that has a long history, you know. That goes back, you know, like hundreds of years. And so you can find that for yourself. All I want to see that, you know, because people should be open-minded, because the Chinese nationals are really pissed off by what your coverage about this Tibet and the Olympics. And, the Olympic torch is not a Chinese property. It's the IOC's property. So what Tibet is doing is now they are protesting violently. They are trying to grab the torch. You know, that is not peaceful. You know, it's, in some sense, it's not tolerable.
Hua Sheng, thank you very much for your call. So Richard Bam, I don't know that he's emblematic of what you were describing, but
yes, but he asks a very interesting question about Tibetan autonomy. Why shouldn't Tibet have autonomy? Or you asked the question, why shouldn't Tibet have autonomy? I think that's a very good question, but it's the conflation of that question with the question of the Olympics as a non-political event belonging to the international community. That's the problem here. I mean, obviously, Beijing invited this kind of protest when they decided to put a spotlight on themselves as the host of the games. I think they didn't expect what was going to happen, but it's their, you know, ultimately it's their responsibility. But the issue of Tibetan autonomy is not the same any more than if we were holding the games this year and the international community boycotted us because of the war in Iraq. It would be something very, very similar. And I think if you're going to go down that road, you're never going to have an Olympic Games again. You're never going to have what it represents, and that is a non-political gathering of athletes. These are non-governmental organizations that sponsor the games. There are no national governments involved. These are athletes competing, and somehow that's been lost in all of it.
Let's talk to one more Chinese American, Juan in Queens. You're on WNYC. Hello, Juan.
Hi, Brian. I think first I want to say it's a great show. I love your show.
Thank you.
Second, totally agree with the professor. I think he's very fair. And the third point I want to make, I think the whole protesting will be backfired. And I have many relatives and friends back in China that they're really proud of this Olympics, and they're very angry about this protesting in London, in Paris. And they, in the Chinese chat room, they already said they will boycott Paris product because they don't think French people treat this thing very fairly. And the only thing I disagree with the professor is I don't think we'll hurt U.S. relationship because President Bush will go to the Olympics. I think we'll, but really it's a dragon coming up. So everything that brings this dragon down is no good. So that's what I see.
And Juan, to you, very, are you still there? Very briefly,
yes.
The two big underlying issues that keep coming up, why shouldn't the Tibetan people have more autonomy, and what about China's influence and inability or unwillingness to use it with Sudan in Darfur?
And first about Tibet, I think Professor is right, because before Chinese go to the Tibet, it's a slavery country, so Chinese people and Tibet people, it's complete problem, but at least Chinese and the Tibet in China, in Tibet, are peacefully living together. And what we, outside of China, we, if you really want to know, I think I didn't go to Tibet, to be honest. If I want to know the truth, I'll go. But a lot of people, even here, Tibet, they just assume things, just listen to the CNN, listen to some major media, they got this impression that...
And Juan, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much, and please call us again. We're just about out of time, Professor, but, you know, I mean, I wonder if you could just, with your knowledge, fact-check the two things that he said, and another one from a written comment that I just got. He said Chinese and Tibetan... Ethnic Chinese, ethnic Tibetans live together peacefully in Tibet. He said Tibet is a slavery society without Chinese rule. I have an email from a Chinese American who did visit Tibet last year and says Tibetan people are allowed to have two or more children per couple, which the majority Chinese are not.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think there's a grains of truth in all of this. But I've spent time in Tibetan societies in northwest China, and I can assure you that Tibetans are angry at Han Chinese, both for their condescending, infantilizing attitude. They regard Tibetans and other national minorities as children. Even the party secretary of Tibet called them little children who need the parental supervision of the Chinese Communist Party. That's enraging. Also, the flood of Han immigrants into Tibet, seeking the good jobs and taking the entrepreneurial roles and opening, becoming the shopkeepers and shop owners, they have basically monopolized the economic opportunities in Tibet. So there's a very real reason for Tibetan anger, and there isn't all this peaceful coexistence. They don't break out in violence every other day, but there is a lot of underlying tension there. So, and as far as the slave society in the past, that's an oversimplification and part of the propaganda that has accompanied the Chinese regime's attempt to sell their government in Tibet as a good deal for the Tibetan people.
And
it's
not
such a great deal.
We're going to leave it there. Richard Baum from the Center for Chinese Studies at UCLA, thank you for being so informative. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.